Thank you very much, David, for the wonderful introduction and the beautiful spread that you brought for everybody. Thank you so much. I hope you don't mind. We'll try and do this a little bit interactive. I'm going to stand a little bit. We'll do a little bit of interactive because in order for me to teach about this year, it's going to be about chumras. So before I talk about my chumras and what I think about chumras, I'd like to ask a few questions to get your idea of what chumras are. So anybody can respond. Can anybody tell me what is a chumrah? So that we're talking on common ground. What is a chumrah? Anybody have an idea what's a chumrah? Do we want chumrahs? We don't want chumrahs. So when somebody say, I'm a machmir, what does it mean?
It's an added stringency. Not necessarily with the foundation.
So you're saying that with not necessarily
not
with
necessarily
a, okay. Okay, we'll you know, and as David pointed out, we have a lot of lawyers here, so you know, we want to know, is a chumrah the letter of the law?
Is that based on the principle that life wasn't meant to be easy and therefore we should do it just to make things harder?
Oh, see, now we're getting somewhere, yeah.
I think a chumrah is where you have a range of piskei halakha.
Right.
And you follow you hold according to the opinion which is the most stringent. But it's based on halakha. It's not just somebody dreamed up what we said.
Okay.
There's a place that said we don't do such and
that's great.
Another place that says we do.
We're going to take in everything that everybody's saying and get it very clear. Well, by the time we walk out of here, we're going to be very clear what's a chumrah and when we should take it, when not. Yes. Anybody else have an idea?
I suggest that a chumrah is also dependent on what the most of the kehillah keeps.
Very good.
And it's relative to...
Very good. We're going to add that. Very good. Very good. Bring that in. Keep that in mind. So, before we start, four questions. That was the first one. Maybe we answered part of this, but what is the purpose of taking on a chumrah? What do you think? Why should people take on? Why not just follow everything to the letter of the law? Or, you know, if this is a halacha of Bidi Avid and a Hafsa Maruba, why take on chumras? If women can cover their arms up to here, why are they covering up to here? If you can work up until Shkia, let's say Erev Shabbos, why are we lighting candles in Mekabel Shabbos early? For example, why are we taking on chumras? What do you think? Why should we take on chumras?
Set up a boundary.
A boundary. It's a good thing to do. Why do we need boundaries?
So to make sure that we don't actually breach.
To break something. Okay. We'll be discussing that. Some good reasons to take on chumras. Anything else? Okay. Let's ask a little bit more, two more questions. It'll touch a little bit more to the heart of the matter. Must a person take on a chumrah? Should a person really live their life? Should they take on chumras? In other words, why should I tighten this tie so tight? You know, why should I live life so with chumras? Should a person take on a chumrah?
If he can.
If he can? What would be the reason why? If he can. If every chumrah I can, I'm gonna be saddled with this whole sack of chumras, and every time I do something. I mean, at what point?
It's a part of Hira Mitzvah, the Flumash Rosh Adin, this type of thing, this type of reason.
Right. Okay, and so he should, but for what reason? For what reason should a person take on a chumrah? And as we know, not every chumrah that comes your way, you're going to take on. But when a person takes on a chumrah, and we'll talk about why a person should take on a chumrah, but when it does, it's got to be with seichel. It can't just be, I'm going to take every chumrah on the book. I had a case where the Rebbe who taught me Yisra B'Hatter, he learned a chumrah that the one of his Talmidim, or his friend, learned the chumrah that you have to sift flour twice. So his wife sifted the flour twice 1 week, tw- twice the second week. The third week, he comes in to make Kiddush, and he sees, and he's with Orchim and everything, guests, and he sees that she didn't, you know, she's a little bit nervous. Make Kiddush. Okay, go wash. He sits down, and just before he's about to make Hamotzi, she blurts out, "I didn't sift the flour twice." Now, sifting the flour twice is unbelievably a chumrah. Everybody will agree that's a chumrah. It's a ritva somewhere. We still have to discuss. I have a paper why somebody should take on a chumrah. But here's a case where his chumrah caused his wife unbelievable tircha, and then through his chumrah, he embarrassed her.
Whose
chumrah
was it then?
It's a ritva. Yeah. Oh, came out to be whose chumrah was it? Okay. We talked about chumras. Question number 4, and then we'll go into this more. Can we take kulas? Can I live my life just with all kulas? Or when should I take kulas? What do you think? Can we live a life with? Should we take kulas? Should a person say, "Okay, I'm gonna take the easy way out"? When does a person say that? There are times. We're gonna get into it. So number 1, we asked, what's a chumrah? So let's divide it up like this. We have a din. A din is what the Torah says for us to do. And then there are also fences that the Rabbanan set up. So the fences are kind of like chumras on the Torah. They're the Rabbanan dins. But still, we're not in the range yet. When we talk about a din de Rabbanan, we're not in the range of a chumrah yet. Because that's also a din. The Rabbanan set up fences, as Alon said, they we want to protect ourselves. In the Rabbanans, there are levels of protection, which we'll discuss. Levels of protection, that's already now chumras. When you have a din of the Rabbanan, let's say, not to eat chicken and milk together, that's not a chumrah. That's a fence, that the Rabbanan clearly made this fence. A chumrah will be, when do these situations apply? How far do I carry it? Okay, those are chumras based on the derabbanan. Then we have minhagim, as you mentioned. Minhagim are chumras for a particular town. This is the way the town is set up. Does glass, let's say for Pesach, does glass absorb or not? Do I have to kosher glass? So Ashkenazim put away the glass, and Svardim keep glass out. So that would be a minhag. Another example of a minhag would be waiting 6 hours. Some people wait between meat and milk. Some people wait 1 hour. Some people wait 3 hours, 6 hours. These are minhagim, traditions. They're also types of chumras. Okay? And in a sense, we'll talk about them, what kind of chumras they are. But they're more like netters. They're more like things that we take on ourselves according to where we are in our lineage. Then we have another thing which I call urban halacha. Urban halacha is just people's mistakes that they take, and this is the gray area. This is the area where we're going to get the most trouble from, which is called urban halacha. And they're based out of ignorance. They're based out of misunderstandings and things that people don't know. For example, I'll tell you an urban halacha. Did you ever hear of the case where on the airplane, everybody knows the case on the airplane where the guy opens up the food, he goes to wash. People have heard of this case, right? And he comes back, he opened up his meat. He comes back and he starts eating, he washes and starts eating, and the non-Jew next to him is looking at his food and he says, you know, excuse me, why aren't you eating your meat? I'm not hungry, the guy says, I'm not hungry at all. But I see how you're eating, how much you're desiring this food. It comes out that after discussion, he says, look, I'll tell you, the Jew says to the non-Jew, I'll tell you why I'm not eating the meat. Because there's a law in Judaism, you've heard this story, right? There's a law in Yiddishkeit, Judaism, that you're not allowed to eat the meat if it's not been watched. And I got up, went to wash my hands, came back, and for that moment, the meat has not been washed. So the non-Jew, he slaps his hand on his head and he goes, my goodness, your God is true and your Torah is true. I actually switched my meat with yours. Everybody's heard that story? Okay? And you believe that story. It's not a true story, I can tell you, but that story is quoted in so many places as a true story. It is not a true story. It doesn't make sense. There's no such halachas like this. Because if you know the halacha, this is how you debunk urban halacha, because you have to learn the halacha. Now, first of all, the meat was in the same place. Secondly, in a normal situation, people are, I'm just going through it quickly, they're afraid to change things because somebody sees you changing things and go, what are you doing, buddy? You know, or the Jew might turn around. Another point would be, you have to benefit. I mean, you know, he worried the guy switched the meat. He didn't worry about the poison in the food. When you're worried about basar nesal min ayin, switching meat, it's for a benefit. But the biggest way to debunk that story is just through seichel, just through understanding what happens on an airplane. What are the chances that he's going to have a schnitzel and switch it? You know, oh, I just happen to have one in my pocket, you know, and I'm going to, here it is, oh, good. The meals don't look the same. So this type of urban halacha, and we can go through more and more and more of these, are used often by people who want to feel, you know, holier than thou. I'm going to tell you an urban halacha, and I'm going to praise the guy. That just shows them, the more they praise the guy, the more ignorant they're showing themselves. But they're going to praise that guy. Okay? So these are the types, just to read.
That particular story is propagated by
Big Rebbeim. I'm telling you, it's
why
false.
Are
why are they doing it? They want to make a point, but their point is based. It just shows. It just. I laugh when I hear that story. Since I've told over many people that the story is false, now I'm getting back feedback. You're right. The story is false. I've actually heard Rebbeim arguing about that story and saying it's false. Tell Ploni, you know, the big Rav that told over the story. Tell him he told it over. Tell him. It's false. People who tell that story over, it's unfounded. Everybody says it was my nephew, it was the Polonia, you know, they give it a name even. The Chaim Yankel story on the airplane, it's unbelievable. But it shows, and this is a very important point, it shows that from urban halacha, you're spreading more ignorance than inspiration. Take something real. That's been my taina with the people that go around telling big stories. Take something real. There's a lot of real things that happen. You don't have to make up stories. Use a Baal Shem Tov story, at least. You know, you don't have to make up stories that every Baal Shem Tov story. I once asked my Rav about the Baal Shem Tov stories. He says, not all of them are real, but any one of them could be. Okay, use something that at least has a chance, not these urban halachas. Okay, so in my course that I teach about halacha, we get into defining an urban halacha, where it comes from. But let's go back to the point. Should a person take on chumras? What is the point of chumras? So let's talk about a few things that we mentioned here. What is a chumrah? So a chumrah, we said, is offense. A chumrah is going a little bit beyond. Let's talk about, for example, food processing. So in food processing, we have, anybody who's involved in the food processing business, inspectors come along, they make sure the place is clean, they make sure that that the food is quality. So with Hechsherim, we have to do the same thing. Usually a Mahadran Hechsher is to prevent us from becoming too lenient. So when we take on a few stringencies based on a halachic opinion, in other words, let's say that for the simplest thing is, everybody knows when chickens, this is just a simple thing, chickens is a machlokus, whether or not you split them open or not, how much you have to salt them and all that. How many chickens you shechtem in it? There's all these different things that we talk about. So, in shechita or in any food processing plant, we don't want to rely on the bidi evit situation lechatchila. We try to rely to make everything mahadrin. That's what it's called. We're not relying. So when you make a few extra chumras, it's the same thing as the FDA coming in America, or the, you know, any of these governmental things, just like they would want their food clean. You can't get it absolutely clean. There's always going to be something in the food. But you want to try and minimize it as much as possible. So by chumras, we're doing the same thing. Because the minute that you let go of in food processing, for example, the minute you let go of the chumras and you start relying on the bidiyavid, it's okay, it's batel, it's this, it's that, you end up making most of your food, just mattering it, bidiyavid, and then it can even go down. So number one reason to take on the chumra is in food processing, we want to try and keep the standard as high as possible so as not to slip into something bad. Number two, why to take on a chumra? So, it's to make a person's life easy. That's that's one of the most legitimate reasons I heard. You might say that it eliminates the person from thinking. Okay, that's true. But at least it makes a person's life easy. One of my friends told me, I only eat badats in my house. What do you mean you only eat badats in your house? Everything else is treif? No. I only eat badats in my house and maybe one or two other, because my kids come home with candy. And my wife goes shopping and I don't want to have to choose which thing is kosher or not. I don't have to, every time I make a decision, I don't want to have to decide on that. So a person can take on a chumra. Remember, we're working on the catch. Why should a person take on a chumra? To make life easy. It just helps you flow along. Any questions? Okay, that's two reasons. Another person might take on a chumra to feel self-worth. You know, I'm trying. I want to do a little bit more. They feel like they get into it. So I'm gonna take on a chumra, and it could also be a personal chumra. I'm gonna learn a little bit more. I'm gonna do a little bit more. I'm gonna dress a little bit more modestly. I'm going to eat, I'm going to buy the little bit more higher hechsherim, because imagine now, for example, you have a slave, and the slave does exactly as you tell him. That's called a slave, correct? Imagine you have a child and he does exactly as you tell him. That's also a slave. If the child goes beyond, and you say, "Bring me a half a drink of, give me a good drink of water," and he fills it to the top, he's looking for ways. Says, "Can you bring me the paper?" And he brings you the paper and the slippers. So then, that's motivated by love. That's how you show love. So sometimes people do a little bit more. That's why we bench on a kazayas rather than a beitza. Because we want to show a little bit more. We want to show Hashem we love. We care. We're satisfied. We're happy. So sometimes people take on for that self-worth, that connection to Kodesh Baruch Hu. Those are good reasons to take on a chumra. Some people take on a chumra for bad reasons. You know, me, I'm holier than you. I have a chumrah. You know, I sift the flour twice. Or my chumrah is that I only eat this one particular heksher that is imported from this certain country, and you can only get it once every 3 months. And therefore, since I'm eating the Mahadrin Mahadrin heksher, anything else is treif. Nothing else. The joke that goes with it is like this. See, I believe that eating kosher should be the thing that unites us. But unfortunately, all the hechsherim and all these problems are the thing that divides us. And mostly it's about by ignorance. But there's a lot of people that feel holier than thou, and I'll show you how it happens. There's a chavrusa. One guy, they're a chavrusa, they're a chavrusa for years. One guy's a real rich guy, and one guy's a very poor guy. Okay, so the rich guy, he's all the time buying badats, and he only has badats, and he eats it, and they both die around the same time. And the other guy just eats any schlepper heksher that comes along. And the guy dies. Both of them die around the same time. So they're, let's say the rich guy died a little bit before, so they're, you know, and then the other guy dies, there were chavrusas. Now their din comes before the courts. So they take in the badatz guy. And they go through, the guy's record is immaculate. No lashon hara. Did it, you know, after Riacha Kamocha, gave his tzedakah, everything. So what happens? They finally get to the point of the food he ate. And they start looking through it. And you know, Yom HaDin, you're going to be accountable for everything. So what happens? They say, oh, this chicken here was Nevela. I said, what do you want from me? I had a badass texture. Yeah, but there was a pagam in the knife. The shochet didn't see it. What do you want? It doesn't matter. You have to be now, you know, atone for that. On the dakas and the most fine things. Okay, they keep going and they say, ah, there was a bug in your food here. I got it from the bakery down the road. It had a badat texture on it. I'm sorry. You know, same thing. We're here to matahir you. We're here to fix you up. And they go down, this wasn't misered. This had another impurity in it. And you go down in the vine and the guy and they, after everything they eat, and I say, look, buddy, you had food that was not kosher, impure, different things happened to it. Boom. Gehenim for you. So you're burnt, we burned this out of your system. The other guy, now he's starting to sweat because he just ate any haksher that came around. So you look and they, same thing. Immaculate record, no lashon hara. Tzaddik, put in his time, fair in his business dealings. Finally gets to the food and they go, hey, Chaim, your chicken was a nevela. I got it from my neighbor. He's a shochet. Who's watching? I don't know. He has a tuda on the wall. He's a shochet. What? They look at him. They roll their eyes. Another thing comes along. You know, the food you ate at the bakery had a bug in it. Well, yeah, I got it from Osem, you know. Did it have a heksher on it? Yeah, it had some. The guy at the factory put a heksher on it. And they go down and they look at his list. And it's the same problems. And he has, every time he has an excuse, I got it from this guy, I got it from that guy. What do you want from me? Okay. They get sick of him and you go up to Shemayim. So now the guy down in the, rotting away, burning up, he says, I want to appeal. He comes up and he says, look, I lived exactly the same life, only, you know, my hechsherim were the badats. And his, how come he doesn't have to atone for all the things that he ate? He says, look, when you said that you only eat badats, that was your opinion. You ate this heksher and you said no other heksher is kosher. That's your opinion. When he ate the food he ate, he relied on a halacha that's called Eid Echad Nema Bisurim. What can we do? He relied on halacha, you relied on opinion. And they put him back down. Sometimes people take a chumrah just to feel holier than thou. They have no idea what they're doing. They just take the chumrah down. Okay? Or to feel superior. I'm the guy that walks around with tzitzis down to my knees, you know, or whatever he wants to, however he wants to do it. The biggest tefillin, you know. There's so many chumras that people take on. So, what is, we heard a few reasons, good reasons to take a chumra, and we heard a few bad reasons to take a chumra. So what is the danger of taking chumras in the bad way? So I'll give you an example. One time there was a reporter who came to my yeshuv. I used to live in the Gush Etzion area. And the reporter is doing a article on me for my hometown, Detroit. And it was a woman. We went around. She just followed me through the day taking pictures. And when we got to the Beis Midrash, where I went to daven in my yeshiva, so I walk into the Beis Midrash. It's in the early afternoon. And she comes right into the Beis Midrash. Now you can imagine a woman, not hair covered, coming into the Beis Midrash in the middle of these guys learning. At any given second, they were just about to open their mouth and just, wow, blast her out of the water. But my Rav in Hebrew said, davening is the Rabbanan, and embarrassing somebody is the Raisa. They all shut up. And then, no one said a thing to her. And they saw, and when she saw that everybody was quiet and they were looking at her a little bit askew, she got the idea and she went out of the Beis Midrash and took pictures from the side. What's a chumrah? Sometimes people take on chumras to beat up other people. That's the bottom line. They take a chumrah. Davening is one, like people have a makom. I've heard of this so many times. People have a makom, and if you sit in my makom, you're going to get it. I'm going to chase you out of there. You know, I'm going to make you feel like 2 cents, and what are you doing in my place, right? People have this kind of mishugas. Another example of somebody taking on a chumrah was, there was one time, this avrech, poor avrech, guy has no money, he's b'siris nefesh to sit and learn. So it's Friday, the bris is going to be on Shabbos, he makes a huge chulent, and right after davening, what happens? The rav comes by, and they're talking, and he says to the avrech, what kind of meat did you use in your cholent? So he said, I used X meat with X hatcher. I might not eat the meat, but don't take it personally, because I don't eat that hatcher. And he walks away. What is that guy? Now he's sweating. He said, if the rub is not going to eat the meat, so then I'm stuck. No, no one's going to eat the meat if the rav doesn't eat the meat. So what did this guy do? He went and borrowed money and made a whole nother cholent with that different hechsher because of this rav. Okay? That rav, I have to tell you, should have kept his mouth shut. Just because you don't eat that hechsher doesn't mean you got to make other people feel bad about that hechsher. Go to either make an excuse and get out of there right away and don't eat anything, or eat and don't worry about what people say, or eat a little bit. I mean, Lamaisa, so many problems come up with people not knowing the halacha. They think that it's not kosher. I mean, Lamaisa, there's all these different terms, but at least don't embarrass the guy. You know the famous story of the two guys. It happens all the time. Two bachrim come to eat at a balabayas's house, and they're enjoying the meal, drinking the wine, thanking everybody, and on the way out, they thank everybody again. And one says to the other, says to the balabayas, "By the way, what heksher was that?" Yeah. Right? I think, X. Well, that's it, Hacksher Polony. Looks at his friend, he's like, I can't believe the guy fed his trafe. You know, they walk out. How many times does that happen? It happens. People are crazy when it comes to these Hacksherim. Because they don't know. They don't know the dinim, they don't know the Hacksherim, they think things are trafe, they think things happening on the table. Most of all, when a person doesn't know the halacha and they're just taking on these chumras, most of all, what happens is that they end up not giving kafschus. We talk about it a lot in our program, in the kashrus program, but the simple example is a person drinks a Coke at McDonald's. That's my favorite example. Coke and McDonald's. The next thing you know, the guy drank a Coke and McDonald's, and he's not religious anymore. He was eating trafe, and McDonald's is kosher now, and who knows what. Because why the guy drank a Coke and McDonald's? You don't see him doing anything wrong. If you know the halacha, you know the parameters of when a person is doing according to the law, and because a person and anything else other than that, when you start misjudging a person, if you don't give kaf schus, it's probably based on some chumrah that you have which doesn't exist. Because if you have everything right, you should be able to judge everybody with kaf schus. The minute you start thinking some poloni is doing something wrong, it's probably because you took on a chumrah that doesn't exist.
So can you have a Coke at McDonald's?
Yes. 100%. 100%.
Maro time.
No more sign.
Okay, that's...
No more sign. What would be the more sign?
I know, I'm asking.
Yeah, no, there's no... The more sign that people usually think when they have a Coke at McDonald's, there's two reasons why when I ask this question, what more sign is it? So people say because the guy maybe is eating trafe and I just caught up to him when he had the Coke. Or they're going to say, people are going to see that he's having a Coke at McDonald's, and all of a sudden they're going to come in and say McDonald's is kosher. These two reasons are totally absurd. But it's on the guy's chumrah. I would never have a Coke at McDonald's. How can he have? This is what I think. That has no relation to the din at all. It's just my opinion that people can't eat there or drink a Coke there. So then they go along and they puzzle the guy. Now they see him down the street, and next thing you know, he's telling you, this guy does. I can't rely on this guy. He's drinking Cokes at McDonald's. I can't rely on him.
My wife has a good joke on two verses from Pirkei Avos.
Yes.
If you see the guy drinking Coke at McDonald's, you say Alta Dinat Chavah. You say Dinat Chavah Bekaps Chud.
Yeah.
But if you watch, you see him eating a Mac Burger. Alta Dinat Chavah Achudakia and come on.
Okay, that's something to it. Okay, that's a good poignant joke. That's very deep. But the thing is that the kaf schus, if you know the halacha, it brings shalom. It brings the ability to give kaf schus because so many people are willing right away to say that guy is not keeping kosher. So many people, they didn't see him do one thing wrong. It's a sickness that we have to get rid of in Am Yisrael. That's about chumras. So, must a person take on a chumra? We're almost to the end, and then we'll open up for questions. Question number three that I asked, must a person take on a chumra? And the answer is yes. People should take on chumras that match their lifestyle, chumras that match who they are and where they're going in life, and with their goals. Chumras can help you get to your goal safely. So I always use an example that let's say you want to drive from Melbourne to Sydney. Now, there's turns in the road, there's ups, there's downs. You're allowed to go, 200 kilometers an hour? You're allowed to go, let's say for argument's sake, you could go 200 kilometers an hour and not break one law. But I guarantee you that if you go 200 kilometers an hour from Melbourne to Sydney, probably won't make it. You'd be lucky to get there alive, even. Okay? Why? Why is that? I didn't break a law. 200 kilometers an hour is perfectly legal. Because chumras help you stop and think. something, if there's traffic along the way, there's unforeseen circumstances, chumras stop and make you think. And so a person should take on chumras, but chumras that match their lifestyle. Whatever your, we could talk about that, what ones match your lifestyle, you have to take it on yourself. And we're talking about your own personal chumras also. Okay? And kulas are also important. Kulas are very important because without kulas, we can't live. What do I mean without kulas? What are some kulas? So the Torah Chatas, he brings down like this. This is the Ramah. This is our soul, our basic Ashkenazi posek. Okay, for Ramah, for Mechaber people, I'm sure the Mechaber will agree to this. There's no difference. He says, V'hine, et natzel atzmi b'dover echad. I'm going to appeal to you on one thing. Shelo yechashdeni hama'ayin. So people shouldn't suspect me, because when they look into and they see that lifamim katafti lahakel behetzim ruba. I wrote, the Ramah says, I wrote that in a hefsed meruba, everybody knows what that, in a loss, like a loss of food, a loss of money, and a hefsed meruba, you could be meiko, ola ani, or a poor person, and it's an important item, a davar chashuv, a bagel for a poor person is a bagel and a sandwich, o lichvod Shabbos, for a rich person, kavod Shabbos, and I hold that kavod Shabbos begins, the din of kavod Shabbos begins right away when you open your eyes on Friday morning, because somehow it seems, no matter how close or far away Shabbos is, I'm always working to the last minute. I don't know how that works out, but the short days or the long days, so kavod Shabbos, so that you don't end up being mechalel Shabbos, so why am I mekel? And all the places where I said in Hefsim Merubitz Mutter, Shasat Cha, Kovit Shabbos, Ani, all these places, that's Mutter Lagamre. Mutter Lagamre. There was never any Isser. It's only a Chumra to go beyond. So why did I go beyond? The Ramah is asking. Makom Makom Min Haglo Marlehem. Slicha, Mutter Lagamre. Dahlach Rak Shachronim Zal Yichmiru Bedover. The Achronim, there were some Achronim that were more Machmir. So I decided to take on a more Chumra view. But in order to give them Kavod, he goes on, in order to show respect. That's what I was saying. Sometimes you take on a little bit more because you want to do it out of love. You don't want to be the son that does exactly what the father asks, because a son that does exactly what the father asks is also a slave. You want to do things, you want to take on things for love. Do we have time still? Okay. So that's the reason why chumras came into the world to begin with. Chumras came into the world to show a little bit more love. Oftentimes, people are battered around by chumras, and chumras get a bad name, because usually people beat up other people with their chumras. But really, if you're doing it right, chumras should be an expression of love. But you got to do it out of education. You can't just take it on because other people are acting that way and making you feel bad. And kulas are important too. Kulas are the place where you got to live. If it's too hard for you, so rely on the din. You can't live life in a straitjacket. You have to be able to live. I just want to two more things. Some kulas, just so that we know, shas hatchap. That means in a hard situation. Let's say you're out. There's no other choice. Shas hatchak means in a difficult situation. So you can rely on the essence of the din. You don't have to go for your chumras. Anything that's mutter bidi evid, if you can't do it any other way, is mutter lechatchila. Essentially, that's what that means. And we said kavod Shabbos, orchim, all these things. Money loss is a reason to be makel. Tircha, shalom bayis. You have to know when you can apply these kulas. You don't have to always be machmir in everything you do. The rule of thumb is very interesting because I hold by kulas. I take a lot of kulas because I really think that most people, most chumras, are made up. You have to know where to draw the line. But that takes learning. If it's a din, I'll do it. And I have my own personal chumras, as I say, because I express my love in my way to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it says like this: Gadol hanoa miyagia kapo, greater is the pleasure from the work of your hands, yoter miyir achamayim. Think about that. The pleasure of the work of your hands is greater than yir achamayim. What does that mean? So, the peirush is that a person who works to find a kula, who works to matir something, is a bigger yir achamayim, or is more pleasure than the yir achamayim that says, I don't know what this din is. I don't know what it is. I'm not going to eat it. I'm not going to be involved in it. So, okay. It's easy to answer something, but it takes work to matir something. And if you want to get those kulas, if you want to really move out of being machmir from the false yirat shamayim and really understand why you're machmir and why you're not and how to get the kulas, so then the bottom line is you have to learn. Because if you don't learn, everything is just your opinion or what you hear in the street. I want to sum it up like this, the final thing, is my bottom line is that if my chumrah will embarrass somebody, then I'll drop it. So if I go to somebody's house, and I usually eat only certain hechsherim, most hechsherim are kosher, I'll eat there. Maybe I wouldn't buy it lechatchila, because I have my standard, I don't want to get involved in, have to make decisions all the time, what's kosher, not kosher. One of those good reasons. But that I should ever embarrass somebody because of a chumrah, I'll never want to. I will always back down from that. If I can find a way that something's bidi evid or hefse merubah, I will always give kaf schus, and I'll eat the food. I'll do whatever I can to make peace. Okay. Any questions? Yes.
If you're just on that last case you mentioned, would you accept the invitation in the first place, or would you decline?
That's a good question. I would depends on how much I like the guy. I mean, Mustam, I would accept it. if I'm comfortable with the person, I'll accept it.
Yeah, because there's a lot of.
I'll accept it. I would accept it.
Simply declining the invitation.
Yeah.
It's potentially embarrassing because the person.
That's right.
My house isn't kosher. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, 100%. I just want to add something about Hilchos Pesach. We're coming up to a very strict holiday. Now, people have all kinds of minhagim, all kinds of things. There's one thing that you got to know, and I've seen it around the world. There are many, many people, just out of a custom, out of a minhag, do not eat at other people's houses. And at first, it was very offensive to me that if I would invite somebody or somebody would come over to visit me and I'd offer them even a glass of water, they wouldn't drink it. Now, you can't take that personally, because I saw over and over and over again that it's a great big group of people that do not eat at other people's houses just out of custom. They'll eat at your house the rest of the year, but on Pesach they're more machmir. So don't take that personally if you see somebody not eating at your house or at the same suda that you eat at it or anything. And as far as that goes, with me going to somebody's house, sure, I would go there. The thing is, what's funny is that usually what happens is what David says. I feel good. I feel good not going to your house. They walk away. I'm holier than thou. Unfortunately, that's like the guy with the cholent. That's people just want taking on chumras to feel good about, to put the other guy down. Any other questions?
Yeah, Chal of Yisrael, you consider that a chumrah?
Chal of Yisrael, no. Chal of Yisrael is... Yeah, Chal of Yisrael is a chumrah. Some people hold that it's a din. I think a great majority of Jews hold that it's a chumrah. Certainly, it would be absolutely forbidden to look down on somebody because they're not noheg Chal of Yisrael. It's a great question. And most people don't even know the dinim of Chal of Yisrael. They don't know the heterim. They don't know the dinim. And I think that they just go along blindly and make people feel bad if they don't have Chal of Yisrael. Talk about it, you know, at least let the guy who wants to make you feel bad learn the inyan before he makes you feel bad. Yeah.
My question doesn't relate strictly to Chumrah, but yeah, thematically linked, I suppose. It's a question about when we abandon Takanot that were made, you know, a number of years ago, hundreds of years ago, and when we continue. And two examples are Mashkim Mekulim, so exposed drinks overnight, which I think most
people... I don't think it's applies anymore.
Hold, it's, yeah, okay, versus, for example, non-Jewish people opening a bottle of wine and not being able to drink that because of Yei Nesech,
which
still hold today, I think.
Okay.
And...
Let's go even once more. Gvinas Akum is the easiest one.
So, yeah, I suppose the question then is, are there any general principles that are applicable, or really have to look at it on a case-by-case basis?
I know, yeah, in the case of Yayin Nesach, if the wine's not boiled, so then that's a problem. Because that's just the Gezeira. But when you talk about Yayin Nesach, and Gevina Sakum is also, even if you know the Gevina is completely good and everything, it was made with... bacteria and all that, and you know it's 100%. Still, if a non-Jew made it, it's no good. But let's talk about Yayin Nesach. Just to understand that it's a gezeira. I'm having a big Purim bash. Along comes my co-worker or one of the guys is a janitor, and he's sweeping the floor and he says, "Oh, I see you got this very expensive bottle of wine on your table." And you look at him and everybody's like cringing. And he grabs it and he goes and he shakes it up and he looks at it and he says, "Wow, this is really cool wine. You know, look at the color, how it runs from the bottle. Very expensive wine. Oh, wow. Okay, I hope you guys enjoy it." Ha, ha, ha. You know, he knows that he just scraped up your wine. What's a din? You're supposed to drink that wine. Right in front of him.
He did it on purpose.
We don't give non-Jews the ability to trip us up like that. The case of the wine, that case of the pouring and everything, that's like a low plug. But when they do it, thank you for coming. When they're doing this in order to trip us up. Now the gezeira goes out the door, and that's a halacha. The same thing if that same janitor or your worker in the catering company comes along, and he he's getting a little nervous, he's getting upset about something, and it's the bar mitzvah, it's the big day, and this is your opening, thing for the catering. This is going to make or break you this suda. And he takes off his apron, slams it down, and he says, "I can't stand working for you anymore." And he starts telling you off, and he walks out the door. And just before he slams the door, he turns around, and he says, "And by the way, I threw a Mike Tyson chicken into your chicken soup. Ha, ha, ha." And he slams the door. What do you do in that case? Can you eat the soup? You can eat the soup. What? You don't believe him. You don't believe him because we don't hand over the ability of belief. Just like we don't believe the goy to say something is kosher, we don't believe the ability to make a treif either. Okay, that doesn't quite exactly answer your question, but since certain gezeiras are in place that we can't move, gevinas akum yayin nesach, certain things are like that.
So, more pointedly, I suppose. The reason I ask a question is because if you have to explain the gzeira of Yayin Nesach to a non-Jew, and ultimately you want to come back to the point that you know, there are some things, some traditions which we hold on to from old times, which though they may not be practically applicable to you, we hold them as a general principle. Then how do you go about explaining why we would choose some gezeirah over others?
These gezeirahs are very simple. You pick out one thing. Pick out one thing. Never try and convince people like with 1,000 different reasons. You do one thing. You say this, Jews are very particular about avodah zarah, and wine, this type of wine, which is poured by any non-Jew, is a type of wine that's used for avodah zarah. Stretch it a little bit. And therefore, we are particular that when once this wine has been handled in that way, so we're not allowed to drink it. You don't have to tell them all the dinim. You just say, you make it one simple thing. Avodah zarah, this is the what they did. And they do that in the church today too. They just still use the wine libations. So you, but the secret is when you're talking to a non-Jew, you have to pick out one thing, one simple thing, and not give a whole bunch of reasons. Because the more you get into it, the more you're going to fall. Because really, we don't know all the reasons. And they get confusing. Does that help? Any other questions? Yeah.
I think this goes back to some of the early halakha, that an issue is mezonos rolls.
Yes.
Which, you know, I'm sure you'll explain.
Mezonos rolls, yeah, go ahead.
Whether they exist or not. And does that change when it's a shas v'tchak, for example, on an airplane, you're three pit?
Airplane, I don't wash. Airplane is mezonos. The bottom line is, if you know the halakha for mezonos rolls, only if you're made, if you're koveya asuda. I, for example, two pieces of pizza I won't make a motzi. I know that there are some people that are machmir, but I make mezonos on two pieces, even up to two pieces of pizza, because I'm not sitting down and having a meal. If it's bread, bread is bread. Pizza is questionable, but if you're eating enough mezonos, then you turn it, then you're turning it into meal. But not enough cake. You don't turn a bunch of cake into a meal. Pizza would be questionable because at least it has the dough. That's a question of knowing the halacha.
So in that situation where you have as much, well, you have enough for a meal, but you're in this plane and you can't.
That's that because I'm a traveler. Forget it. I'm not Kobe Asuda. I'm forced to eat. I wouldn't eat that in a normal circumstance. I hate the plane. Forget it. There's no way I'm going to wash for that. That's my personal thing.
But if you had that same roll at the airport outside.
Same thing. If I'm traveling, even in my house,
you took it back home.
Even in my house, if I'm just eating on the go, that to me that's a snack. If I was sitting down, and I was going to have that roll with a bowl of soup or some other condiments around it, like a first course with it, and I had that roll, yes, I would wash. A person, I think, in general, we know whether we're eating it on the go. I got to gobble this down in 5 minutes. That's a snack. I'm not going to wash for that. If I'm going to sit down, I'm going to talk to my friend, I'm going to have a hot dog with it. Already now we're up to the point where it's a suda. Keep going, yeah?
In response to your moshul about putting chumra, good reason is to show extra love, to be a son, not an eved. So if one son does that, and he goes, I'm a super son, super tzaddik, super son, I'm doing everything my father wants, plus a lot more, and one son only does exactly what his father says to do, you're never going to get some resentment between the two, and the son who does everything will look down on that other brother.
Stay tuned. I have shiurim on that. One of the chinuch shiurim that I have. Maybe next time I come, we'll give a shiur in chinuch. What happens? Usually, the best thing is to stop that kind of a situation where you have one son, the good son, and you have the son that's kind of like the high maintenance son. So it's up to the father how he's going to relate to that.
Well, that's a bit difficult. We're talking about Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about Hashem.
Also, Hashem. Okay.
Like Am Yisrael, one. Moshul, one family.
You know where the resentment comes from? You know where the think the about this. The resentment comes from. You know, the Schwitzer there, the guy, the good son, making the, usually that's where it comes from, making the high maintenance kid feel bad. But if the good son would turn around and say to the high maintenance son, well, that's pretty good what you did. I like the way you X, Y, or Z. You know, you shot that basket. Okay, I was here in the... You know, I like the way you did the chesed to your friend. You passed him the ball. You know? I like the way you honored... What happens, that's a competition. That's a competition. That comes not from this. The people usually have self-worth until they're told not to. So if he's not having self-worth,
that's patronizing. You can't be as good as me, but you're doing the best you can. I'm proud of you.
That's great. No, but you threw in, you can't be as good as me.
But that's what you're thinking. I'm a superstar.
Okay. Well, then the achiever has to work on himself. That's gaiva. Which is worse, being high maintenance and low self worth, or low maintenance and gaiva? What do you think is worth in Hashem's eyes? But I bet you there's a lot of people walking the streets now in Melbourne that have a high place in Hashem because they might be high maintenance, but they're humble people. I bet you that they have a higher place in Hashem's eyes than a lot of these low maintenance people with a lot of gaiva.
But that's if you believe you can be better. You can say you can be better, but not if you're choosing not to be better.
Yeah, well.
Well, that's different.
Every case on its own, but you get the point where I'm going.
Generally, most people can do more than that too. Taking a look at them.
That's a whole other thing. That's join the course, and you can also get out and do more. What you can do if you learn a little bit and work on yourself. Everybody can. Everybody can. David.
Thank you very much.